Welcome everyone. So let's begin first with practice. So if anyone has any questions, anything they want to raise in terms of sitting practice, walking practice, loving kindness practice, mindfulness practice, and then the challenge that everyone has in terms of using the practice of mindfulness and loving kindness and compassion and understanding and all these various Buddhist practices to facilitate transformation, the capacity to live a mindful life, which really means a life in which we are aware always of our capacity for goodness in all situations, which isn't always readily apparent to us. So if anyone has any questions, please feel free to ask. Yes.
Recently I had the opportunity to activate my practice in an immediate way. I was confronted with my own rage. And a person was being very rude to me and dismissive and cruel. I was able to not aggress in return, which I'm really happy about. But I got in the car after the incident and I became enraged. And I worked it over for a little while and was verbally really very upset. I thought about impermanence, I thought about non-self, I stepped away from myself, I tried to make myself much less important and my ego. I tried to open up my heart to metta for this person that for whom I was feeling hatred. And I succeed, more or less. But it still weighs upon me, and every time I start to think about it, I kind of just push it away. And my question is there a way for me to not feel rage?
You know, the true answer is yes. Now the issue is, you know, are we there yet? So to say we have the capacity is important. Because we know that most people who live totally in the world of themselves and their egos and their just kind of ways of doing things, they believe all these things are normal. Anger and rage and fear and despair and jealousy. You know what I mean? That this is you know, that the drama of life is normal. Again, Dharma shows us that that's not true. That's really abnormal. Because normality is really to live in truth with reality, right? If we looked at normality. But again, we are sick. And in the same way, you know, when we get a good case of the flu or, you know, some good physical illness, it reminds us of our mortality, you know, that we do have bodies. A good case of rage, you know, is a good reminder how ensnared we are still in our delusion of self. But as you know, just to say that, to understand that, is not the same as able to be lived. But again, you know, the obvious test is, whatever the situation is, where this person was cruel or unjust or whatever, if you had been here and you'd been watching it happen to someone over there, you know, i.e. it was happening to somebody else, you might have looked at it with some sense of, oh, that's no way to treat somebody, but the rage you feel, And the drama that you create and the desire, you know, would not have been apparent. So it's obviously what gives that situation its knife is we feel it's in our heart. It's directed toward us. If it was directed over to Vivian, you know, our reaction would be totally different. So that's the cue, you know, that lets us know, oh, myself is totally involved here. Okay. So that's good to know. That's very helpful for us. You know, when we are very sick, right, when we are ill, we have to take medicine. It is too late for preventive measures, right? At that point, saying, oh, if I'd only been more healthy, exercising, eating better, getting more sleep, you know, doing all those things, you know, maybe I wouldn't have gotten sick. At that point, that's kind of too late for all that, right? We have to deal with the illness at hand and cure ourselves. And then hopefully after we're cured, we can then, you know, resume a regime of preventive care. In the same way, a lot of the Dharma teachings that we practice, you know, which are facilitating us when these things happen, perhaps not to react the way we did. And again, you know, the fact that you didn't murder this person, or you didn't, you know, physically attack them, or you know, go toe for toe in cruelty and viciousness, you know, could be something to say that your practice is working.
Right?
Right, and I say that as you know to really say we have to be, you know, we have to understand that our healing transformation happens in the context of our life. It doesn't happen in some abstract world, you know, ideal world. And so yes, you know, I mean, for somebody who, I'm not saying you, but for somebody whose response to frustration was always physical aggression. For the physical aggression to stop and just be a, you know, mental aggression, developmentally is a significant advance. You know, our capacity for doing less harm. You know, and again, also to be in that situation like you're in, and to know that there was another way. You know, and. But obviously, you were just kind of reaching out to try to grab hold of anything, you know, to stop it. All the Buddhist medicine you could find, yeah. But as we can see, you know, sometimes, you know, these, what we call these mental formations, these reactive patterns, are just very deep. You know, and sometimes when it feels like the knife is right there in the wound, there's really not much we can do but acknowledge our suffering. And to me, that's, you know, if there's one thing we can do to get us out of it, is to just stop and acknowledge the deep hurt that we are now experiencing. My sense is we get caught up in the ruminations of revenge and outrage because we're still not willing to go deeper into the pain. And again, we know that if we want to really help someone else who's in that same situation, beside all the palliative things and the nice things we could say to them, our capacity to allow them to touch their deep pain, right? And to be willing to be with that person in that place is not easy for most people. You know, we don't like to go to those places in ourselves, and we're not comfortable really going to those places with others because they're a little out of control. They're not smooth. They're not nice and pretty. They're often very dark. And it's a dark place within us. Dark why? Not just for the nature of the negativity there, but dark because we don't like shedding light there. You know. So you know, to stop and acknowledge, in this moment I am deeply suffering. Or, you know, better said, in this moment there's a part of me that's deeply suffering, deeply wounded, deeply hurt by something. Am I willing to just stop and see what that is and just be present to her? You know? You know, we want to stop it right away, right? That's, I think, why we grab for the technology. You know, give me some Buddhist trick here to turn this thing off. Because there's a sense like this is bad, right? Or this is wrong, or I don't want to be here, or I shouldn't be here. I should. But my sense is no. In that moment, that's our truth. I mean, that's not our truth, but that's the truth of where we are. And rather than running from it, and rather right away trying to use Buddhism to kind of immediately dissipate it or ameliorate it or wall it off or escape from it, you know, am I willing just to be present? Because what it, I mean, all it is what? Is hurt and rage and I mean, it's just feelings. It's just thoughts. I mean, it's not a big deal. And it's arising for a good reason, meaning causes and conditions. You know, and I'm sure if you looked at it openly, you go, oh, I know this place in myself. Right? I don't like it. I'm not proud of it. I'd rather it wasn't here. But if we got rid of all that stuff, we were just, oh, this is, I know her. And I know that she suffers in this, you know. And can I just be with her? And then I think that's worth exploring, because I think those moments of deep rage or fear or sadness or despair, they're very revealing. Right? And if we're willing to stay there, there's a lot that we can learn about ourselves. Because if this is, if we say that our path is a path of healing and transformation, well, what is it that needs to be healed and transformed other than that part of ourselves? Right? Or else we can play around at a more surface. You know, but in moments like that, she's out. Right? And she's not pretty. Is she? Right. And so this is a wonderful moment if we can stop and be present to her. Yeah, I mean, it's all about self and ego, and it's all about, you know, wanting to control things, right? Because we believe what? People shouldn't treat me that way, should they? People shouldn't act that way to me, or people shouldn't say those things to me, right? But the truth is what? They do. Right? Happens all the time, doesn't it? We just don't like it when it happens to us. And that's, again, our... I mean, again, I'm not saying it's pleasant. I'm not saying we go out of our way looking for situations like that. But it's just life, isn't it? And there are people, you know... We don't live in utopia. I mean, I feel like I'm saying something very trite. But we realize... We all know that, don't we? And yet somehow we're always thrown by these kinds of situations and people as if it shouldn't be happening. As if we live in some ideal world where there's not a lot of egocentricity and cruelty and indifference and, you know, people in their own woundings wound others. I mean, that's really probably much more, or at least I wouldn't say, I don't know, I mean, there's no statistics on this, but probably at least it is equal. Equal to the goodness in the world, there is the badness in the world, right? Equal to the kindness in the world, there's the cruelty in the world, right? And we seem to have no trouble accepting the plus side of things, but we seem to have a difficult time accepting that other side is very much part of our world. Now, in the same way that plus and minus, we're just calling it that, is very much part of ourselves. Right? And in the same way that we are practicing to transform, right? That doesn't mean that it's still not there in us, is it? And it's, you know, still very much there in the world. And that's not making a judgment, good or bad, that's just saying that's just what is. So again, you know, we don't want to use the practices of Buddhism, you know, or even practice of like loving kindness, like, you know, it's like wallpaper. You know, a lot of us use this, you know, stuff like wallpaper to cover over. Right? Like some kind of multiple personality kind of thing where we have one voice, you know, I hate her, I hate her, I hate her. Oh, I love her, I love her, I love her. Hate, love. The truth is, in that moment, what? You hate. What? That's the truth. And rather, you know, and for someone who hates to kind of try to force out of your mouth words of loving kindness.
The truth is that I see a lot of suffering.
Yes.
But I'm so reactive.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, that's all.
And I get sucked in.
You get, yeah, that's all. You know, and your own capacity to be present to that part of yourself that suffers so and can get so angry and resentful, all of a sudden you go, oh, now I understand her. Yeah. When the mind moves into those places, one is capable of terrible things, right? Thinking terrible things, saying terrible things, and if we're not careful, you know, doing terrible things to us. Right? It is a place we all know. It's just a matter of degree, isn't it? And so our capacity to be with those places in ourselves in a very understanding and compassionate and open way allows us also not to be so judgmental about others and to be much more understanding and compassionate toward them. I mean, ultimately, it is understanding and compassion that liberates us from these kinds of reactive ways of looking at things. But it's, you know, it's a journey. And it's not, you know, just, you know, getting better, 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 better. It's like, you know, we think we're doing better. And all of a sudden, like, this happens, and we realize it's spotty. It's spotty. But again, the trajectory generally, you know, it's more like this, but it's moving in that direction, you know? You know, we didn't see your name in the police blotter. Michael didn't have to bail you out or anything. You know, yeah, you know, so things are better.
All benefit by it, but there's something that you said, I don't know if I misunderstood or that I didn't seem to agree with, if I did or not.
Mm-hmm.
You gave the example, well, if we had, if I say if I had been witness to rage that was at Vivian instead of myself, that we wouldn't react as violently, say, seeing it, perhaps seeing something happen to someone else. And I don't necessarily agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that if I see harm, even, well, sure, it's always going to be more intensive than somebody that you know. But even to a stranger, if somebody's trying to perpetrate harm, it has a very deep effect.
Mm-hmm.
And not, I find not much different than the effect that it would have on myself. And I, but maybe. Maybe there's something I don't understand, because I thought that maybe I was really understanding my practice and being very much within my practice that I could have an equal amount of compassion, even if no harm is coming to me. And then it helps me temper my own reactions. So, what I'm saying,
that's fine.
Yeah, but.
Mm-hmm. For example, if your house burned down, and all your possessions and all your photographs and everything meaningful and sentimental to you were totally lost, and if the same thing happened down in Marco to Rose and her house, you're saying that your response would be equal.
Well, in a certain way, yes. Mm-hmm. The depth of understanding of what a person is suffering, yes, I think so.
But I'm talking about your own personal suffering from your own loss. Would be no different than hearing about somebody else's loss?
Well, it can't not be different, because now we're talking about material possessions. But if you just take an act of vengeance on somebody without it,
well, I think people are very invested in their self, in their self-image, and how they want to be treated, and how people should talk to them or not talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, and can be deeply affected, even more than loss of possessions is loss of other kinds of. So that's what I meant. But again, if you're saying that's not the way we do, that's fine.
But it's also a question, is that a good, is that good to aspire to be that way.
I think it's good to aspire to becoming a Buddha. And ultimately, a Buddha is someone who has uprooted the notion of self and other. And so therefore, we would say that to a fully enlightened being who is totally free of selfhood and whose the suffering of others, the suffering of themselves is equal, is a state of wonderful spiritual development and truth. At the same time, what was being presented by Srila was a very honest expression of, where she's at. And I think it's important that we practice from where we're at. That's all. And I think in most cases, we do react differently. If someone is, let's say someone is belaboring you, belittling you, cruel to you, calling you names, I would imagine that, but maybe not, that one's response would be different than, again, Corey telling you about a situation where that happened to her. If Corey told us that, we might say, we would feel for Corey. But the kind of drama often that is created is much more profound, and it sticks more when it is us, because we are very invested in our own self. Having said that, we all have to just be honest with who we are and where we're at. So that's all. I think that's the main thing. That our practice always be honest and very clear of where we're at. And we're all different. In Buddhism we talk about there are 108,000 Dharma doors. Which means there are infinite number. Now, why is that? Because sentient beings, human beings, are all different. Right? We're all different here, right? Our life, our situation, our development, our experience is all different. So therefore, each of us has to, that's why teachings are generic, but their application has to be very specific. Right? That's why we go to the doctor. Because we're hoping that the physician of any type has the capacity of knowing specifically, right, in our situation, how the disease or whatever is manifesting, and in very individualistic ways, what kind of treatment would be most beneficial for us, which may be different to the person next to us. It's the same way with the Dharma. So the bottom line, you do it your way, you do it your way, you do it your way, you do it your way. The bottom line is, are we getting healthier? That's the bottom line. The Buddha's teaching is simply about the remediation of suffering, which means the developing the capacity to be happier, more peaceful human beings, free of rage, free of fear. Free of despair, all those things, and there are many ways and processes to have that unfold. So there's no one way, no right way, no wrong way. Good. Any other yes?
Another Lama is similar to Shiva, in a way, looks like Shiva. Witness great suffering in someone I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to work very hard for my own suffering and to detach, to be non-attached. But then I had this information that I was really flirting with avoidance.
Right.
So
it's not about avoidance. I mean, again, what we talked about with this with Srila is We're not skirting around the rage. We're not skirting around the suffering of the hurt. And we're not skirting around the attachment that we have to whatever, however way our ego is processing that situation, whether it's processing the way of our own self-righteousness and their lack of it, or in terms of our own goodness and their lack of it, right? Whatever story we are creating around the situation, the underlying suffering has to be present too. So you're present to someone suffering, and that makes you sad. What does that mean when you say it makes you suffer? So it's interesting how the suffering of another, right, how we turn it into an issue for ourselves, which is what we're talking about. A Buddha doesn't do that, does it? A Buddha has the capacity, when someone is cruel, angry, right, to us, someone who has no self, who has no self invested in the situation, right, is able to see the suffering of the person who is acting in this way, and able to clearly see that there are causes and conditions that have created this person to act in this way, and it's all just based on their own suffering and delusion. And so therefore, someone who is free of self has the capacity of reacting to that situation in a very open and compassionate way, because that situation is not contaminated by a whole drama going on over here. When there's no drama going over here, we're free to be totally present to that situation without any investment of self. Right? Can you see how liberating that is? This is really a very sick, sad person here. And again, I'm not talking about if someone is physically abusive or just gone, you know. There are ways you have to deal with it. But it's just a suffering person, isn't it? Because healthy, whole, happy human beings don't act that way, do they? And so, it's no different, we may be walking down the street and now we have a lot of, a lot of homeless people are people who are being deinstitutionalized from psychiatric facilities. And oftentimes, you're in situations where you run into people who are sick, right? And they're on the street and they may come up to you and start talking all kinds of crazy garbage to you, but you know they're sick, right? So you feel bad for them. And you don't get mad at them for saying what they're saying because you know they're sick. And a lot of times people say, oh, he's just drunk. She's just drunk. So right away we go, oh, well, we understand. Well, we don't take it personally, and we see it's really about their suffering. We don't make it about us. But too often we make the drama about us, don't we? And so we're not just present to their suffering, and how can I be of help to them or support to them? It is now touching. Because what? Because now we're afraid. What's going to happen to me? And so it's like what Sheila says, the drama then gets transmitted over here. And now we've created a drama of what? Fear. Sadness. Of loss. Which often prevents us from really being there in an understanding and compassionate way for another. But then the truth is, like you're saying, but that's what's going on inside me. Right? I have to be honest. Right? there's a part of me in relationship to that other person's. There's a part of me that's very afraid, scared. And so it's very much like Sheila's situation. Am I willing to be with that part of myself? Right. Open it up. Acknowledge and embrace. And embrace. To soothe, to calm, to take time with.
And in doing that, arguing immediately, like arguing in a way, avoiding the other person's suffering.
I don't know, are you? Why are you avoiding the other person's suffering? You said it's happening right in front of you.
Or are you avoiding feeling?
I don't know what the situation is. You know, we don't want to we over intellectualize a lot. Life and relationships. You know, again, the emptier we are, the more clearly we can see. The emptier we are, the clearer we can see and be in touch with, clearly, the other. And the more open and clear we are, the more capable of where we are of being present to ourselves. You know, in Zen, we always hear, things are just what they are. What does that mean? Well, I mean, it's easy to go, well, you know, a watch is just a watch, right? A glass is just a glass, you know, I mean, it's just, this is just this, right? But it's the same thing is true for feelings and emotions. You know, sometimes we may think someone's suffering and they're not suffering. They are just going through what they're going through. They're just experiencing what they're experiencing. And we project all kinds of stuff. To really live in truth is to get rid of projection. Projection means what? You know, a projector, you know, the projector's back here and it's projecting an image over there, isn't it? Right? And we think that's the image is what's happening, right? But the image is being thrown up by the projector. So projection means, you know, my own thoughts, my own history is projecting onto the world, onto other people, onto other situations, my own stuff. So I think I'm seeing what's going on out here, but I'm really just seeing myself. Right? I'm just seeing my own fears, my own issues that are being projected out into the world. And so I'm always lost in this, as we say, we talk about, you know, that we're lost in a world of our own creation. We can't even see what's real. Because our own fears, our own needs, our own wants, our own ego-based desires and everything are just always, you know, projecting out into all kinds of situations and people. So we want to, the practice is about revealing that. Right? Oh, I know, you know, a couple of months ago I went to, with my son to see, you know, the Avatar in 3D IMAX. Right, it's you know, you're really in it. If you've ever been to, I'd never been to IMAX before. I mean, it's like, boom, you know, it was quite an experience. You're really in it, right? But yet, it was just a movie, wasn't it? You know, and it's important to be in it. but also to know it's a movie. And one can do that, can't one? So, you know, we can be very involved in the drama of life, and if we are involved, it's messy, right? It's messy. And I mean, I'm not telling you anything, right? You know, it's a mess. People are born and die and getting sick, and they're happy and then they're sad, and they're stable and they're unstable, and they're gaining and they're losing, and they're going up and they're going down, and they're on the medication and they're off the medication. I mean, it's just, right. Right? They're healthy, they're sick, right? They're doing well, they're doing terrible. You know, we laugh because what? It's true, and it's normal. I mean, this is life. Right? I mean, you know, I mean, we could go on and on and on like this, right? But this is life. And what the Dharma is about, what practice is about, what mindfulness is about, is how can I see this all clear? How can I really understand deeply what is going on here? And even more important, how can I understand deeply and clearly that which is perceiving all this? Because that and may all be going on, but that which is perceiving it, which then may be, you know, getting sad, getting despairing, getting afraid, getting enraged. I mean, that's right here. That's something I can immediately do something about. That's a suffering that I can immediately remediate. So, you know, the cruelty, the anger, the rage, or whatever, the suffering, the hurt, the childhood issues of that person who, you know, aggressively, emotionally assaulted you, right? You may not be able to do anything about that suffering. But what that elicited in you, that you have a capacity as a bodhisattva, someone who has made the vow to alleviate the suffering of beings. So, right? So when you experience yourself suffering, you have the capacity of stopping and acknowledging there's a deep suffering in me. My job is to what? To go to those who are suffering and to help. And help in what way? Make it worse? No. Hopefully we can come to those who are suffering in a meaningful and helpful way. And so we have to begin with ourselves. We have to be willing to come to those messy, dark places within ourselves. Places of fear, places of anger, places of jealousy, places of, you know, all those places. And to liberate ourselves from suffering. And the first thing is to be present. That's the hardest, right? Am I willing to stay present to my own suffering and just stay there and experience it as it is? And then when things are quieter, to look deeply into it, to see where its roots are. And once you have gone through that process within yourself, which, you know, is a process over time. Once you have that capacity, then your capacity to really be with another suffering is much deeper. Because you're no longer afraid of suffering. You're no longer afraid of the mess of the world. It's a mess. That's our challenge, to be happy janitors. Just every day cleaning up the mess. Did you have?
Just a question.
Mm-hmm.
In the same situation as Sheila, if one does express rage,
mm-hmm.
Is there a process that one should go through maybe with the other person at a certain time? I mean,
if you reach out to the other person, mm-hmm.
either make some
sort of
an apology to them and try to
smooth
it over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I think the first, in our tradition, the first thing is we take care of ourselves. Right? So when we go to the other person, we're no longer activated. You know, and those of you who have been involved with Thich Nhat Hanh and the, you know, his thing about the peace treaty and things like that, which is very hard for people like us. We love to engage, and you know, it's like, you know, if you're really angry at somebody, you know, don't go there until you're quiet. You know, make an appointment, you know, can I speak to you next week about what happened? You know, we want to do it right away, and often we're still too activated. So ideally, we kind of spend a little time taking care of ourselves so we're calmer, clearer, you know, the emotions have calmed down, and we kind of understand more deeply what activated us. And then, of course, because we are connected, and because all this emotional stuff that arises us always arises in relationship to others, right? I mean, if we were, you know, if we were miraculously spawned, you know, on a desert island, and you know, we lived on, you know, the coconut that fell every day, you know, I don't know what our emotional life would be like. You know? So, you know, our emotional life is very much in relationship to others, and learning to develop harmonious relations, I think, is very much our practice, especially in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, which is very much oriented toward interconnection and relationship. So, yes, you know, the capacity to come to someone and be willing to acknowledge, right, our own participation in the situation, to be very open about, you know, our own feelings of contrition. Again, you know, it's anger in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, because it often is a kind of emotional inner signal in a situation that something's off here. When something's wrong, it's for most of us, we just don't take it as a signal and then you know, immediately go into some kind of action in a positive way. I mean, you know, we allow it to turn into anger and rage and acting out and thinking and saying and all that. So oftentimes what we're apologizing for is that the anger got in control of us, and we said and did things that caused harm, because one can be angry about the situation, and come to someone and talk to them about the situation that made you angry, without having to get into aggression. Right. So anger in and of itself is usually not the problem. It's just that we are not comfortable with our anger, and often it leads to verbally or in other ways acting out. And so that, to apologize for that, for the things we said, or the things we did or didn't do, I think is a good beginning. And to come from it, not from a place of blame, from a place of self-acknowledgement. And then, of course, you know, seeking understanding, right, and mutuality. And always to, you know, how can we begin anew? I think that's all, you know, I think what happens a lot is people get stuck on kind of keep replaying the situation, and before you know it, you're right back into it again, right? You know, all of a sudden you find, what you've done is activated it in you, and then it's activated in them, and all of a sudden, you know, you thought you were coming there to make peace, and all of a sudden it's war again. So, and I think that's because we keep trying to make sense of what happened in the past, other than acknowledging that was a screw up. And how can we acknowledge that and express our contrition for what was said or not said, and really talk about in the future when these kinds of things occur, when there is a misunderstanding, when there's this, how can we do it differently? You know what I mean? What's going to be the deal? I mean, that's why Thich Nhat Hanh, if you read, you know, about the peace treaty, it's really about couples and families signing a peace treaty, which is a real clarity about the process in which we deal with conflict, the way we deal with misunderstanding, the way we deal with the arousal of anger, and that everybody is kind of in agreement about that. So in that sense, again, a lot of these situations are good. Did that answer your question? I mean, you were... Yeah. Or was it something else you were trying to
say? No, it did. But one more thing.
Yes.
Because what caused the situation, I still feel it was the other person's lack of sensitivity.
Yeah.
So I still have that issue.
Yeah. So the other person lacks sensitivity. That may be true.
Mm-hmm. But it's still then it's my responsibility.
Because you want them to be sensitive.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly. The problem is what?
What mine wants.
Yeah, and the truth is they lack sensitivity.
Right.
That's the truth. Right. They may have lots of other good qualities and all that, but they lack sensitivity. Okay. Right. Did you see? It's like we want this to be a perfect world, and we want everybody to go out there and meet our needs. And it's just wonderful when we can go, they lack sensitivity. And my badgering them about they got to be more sensitive is probably not the best way of doing it. You know, it's like, that's why in Buddhism there's that word, you know, upaya, skillful means, you know, which means, I see the problem, you know, and I kind of see where I'd like it to be. But there's got to be a skillfulness in how we get from that, you know, which means one is appropriateness. You know, who is this person? Do I really understand it? Right? Which means, do I understand the cause of the condition that have, you know, I'm labeling this unsensitive? You know, it could be from where they came from. They may be the most sensitive person who's ever come out of that situation. Right? But if you're coming from, you know, hyper, you know, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? It looks like, you know, no sensitivity, but it could be they're doing quite well. Right? And then again, it's just skillfulness. We go, so you might be thinking, well, I'd like them to become more sensitive. By badgering them to be more sensitive or having these direct, you know, it doesn't seem to work, does it? You know, but that's our own ego, because we keep hammering away at it. Rather than going, it doesn't work. And I get myself upset, I get them upset. Oh, all right. So they're not sensitive the way I'd like them to be. There are probably things about me that aren't the way they'd like me to be. And how can we just begin at that place of acceptance? And then how can we, through skillfulness and dialogue and mutual understanding, you know, move in a certain direction. Again, if that person wants to move, you know, maybe they don't want to move. And then we're in one of those places. But, so we will continue with Master Hanshan. Next time. But again, this is the living Dharma, right? I mean, we have to, it's really about, I mean, some people you know, some people come and they love this. You know, they like the direct. But the teachings have to be lived, right? Or we have our Zen world, and then we have our everyday world, and often they are like two different worlds. They have to come together, and this is where they come together. They come together in the world of relationships, interaction, because it's in that world that the ego plays. And we want to help the ego to do it differently, so there is less suffering for ourselves and others, and more happiness, joy, equanimity. So thank you.